Hi, my name is Angelo Bacque, and this is Business of Hype. I've been fortunate enough to witness the come up of today's guest firsthand. From the very start, Sage Elcesa was something special. He's always been more than a skater, more than a model, more than a musician. And it's in that blur of his own artistry where Sage really thrives. Lately, he's found his lane as Navy Blue. And you'll find out in this episode, his influences run as deep as his lyricism. What else would you expect from the man who introduced Earl Sweatshirt to Tyler, the Creator? All right, let's find out. What's up? My name is Angelo Bacque. I am the creative director and founder of Awake New York. This is the Business of Hype, brought to you by Hypebeast. And today I'm honored to bring Sage Elcesa. Sage, do you mind introducing the listeners to who you are?
Yeah, you just did it. My name is Sage. I'm happy to be here.
So just to give a little background, I've known Sage probably 15 years or so, 14, 15 years. And Sage and I, during my tenure at Supreme, worked on many projects. Sage was, at least for me, not just, I think to call Sage a model would be minimizing what he brought to the table, but I would say more of a muse. And a lot of people don't know, but one of the biggest challenges at that job was transitioning from the original Supreme team as a face of the brand to finding new faces and to be kind of like the new muses of the brand, new icons. And Sage was a huge part of that. So I kind of have my version of the story of how we met or how your photo came across my desk, but I want to hear your version first, how the relationship started with the brand.
With the brand or with you?
With the brand first. Okay. Let's talk about the brand.
So I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up at the shop, and they would Jeff and Berto were like, whenever you need a board, whatever you need, we got you, you know. So probably from the age of like 8, I started going there. I used to hang out on Fairfax with the other Odd Future guys, and I think at like 13 or 14, I think, is that when it started?
Yeah, 14.
14, there was talks of a more serious skate team being created, and that's how it blossomed. And then when I moved to New York, you know, Supreme, the company, was introduced to me, because all I knew was just the LA shop, you know. And should I just go right into
how? Go right into it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I went to the office, I don't know what for, but I remember just seeing you and like looking around the space and not seeing myself, mm-hmm. and just being like, that's my guy, you know, that's my point of contact, you know. And yeah, you kind of just took me under your wing, took me down to Canal Street, got me a gold chain, pinky ring, and yeah, the rest is history.
What originally drew you to the brand?
I think just skateboarding, you know. I can truly say that the warmth and like family dynamic of the LA shop really like sold me. You know, I was a kid, you know, I hung out at Diamond a lot, and I felt like Supreme was like the level up, you know, just in terms of notoriety. And I also, I don't know, they had this what's the word, they were known for being like assholes in the shop, but I never got to experience that because they were always so warm and comforting to me and all the other younger guys that were around. I remember I went to like a skate camp for summertime, and like they gave me a bunch of stuff, Benny Needles gave me a bunch of stuff.
Shout out Benny Needles. Yeah,
and I was just like, it was hard to get rid of me at that point. You know, I was just like, how can I reciprocate this care? You know, and I was a young kid, so I didn't know really how to do that, you know, except for like maybe just going there all the time.
Yeah.
And looking back, it was definitely annoying to have a bunch of 14, 15 year old kids hanging out in the shop all the time. But I think that they're probably proud of the fact that they got to create such a home away from home for us, you know?
Right.
Watching all the skate videos. And I mean, my real like love for skateboarding definitely was influenced by Brian Lotti and Jimmy Gorecki.
Mm.
Jimmy was like monumental in showing me, I don't know, you know, I'm fairly young, so a lot of the skate videos that I had seen, I didn't know who the people were. I just knew what I liked and what I didn't like. And Jimmy was like, you should watch this, you should watch this. And Brian was like, watch this, watch this. Kind of like skateboarding 101, learning about those that came before me. And I don't know, I think I was just like knowledgeable at a fairly young age. And I think I just remember seeing, you know, like guys that I really loved wearing the Box logo shirt and a lot of old footage. And I don't know, it was just historical. I was obviously, I felt very privileged to even have the connection to the brand at an age where like free clothes was like $1 million, you know what I mean? That's it.
And what, so even before we get to the whole Supreme thing, before that, how did you originally get into skateboarding?
I met a kid early, like preschool or something, and they had that what's it called, show and tell.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in with, and he unfolded this board, you know, and there was a photo right in the middle of him sitting on a skateboard, and it almost felt as if I didn't hear anything he said about his family, his mom, his dad. I was just like, what is that thing? You know, I want whatever that is. And I went home and told my dad. I was like, I saw at school today, this kid was sitting on like a thing with wheels, you know? And he was like, oh yeah, it's a skateboard. And I think that my dad just knew a bunch of skateboarders, you know? And there was a skate shop by where he lived. He got me a board. And because of my generally I have an obsessive nature, anything that I get into, I want to like do it all the way. And just hours and hours and hours outside, you know, sitting on the board, because I didn't know that you were supposed to stand on it. And I busted my lip, and my dad was like, well, you're supposed to stand on it, you know? And so once that happened and I started understanding, oh, you can do tricks. And I think the thing I loved so much about it was that felt like, you know, like it was my time, you know, especially because I have three sisters. I loved basketball. I loved playing soccer. But there was something special about just like going outside, and it was just me, like, having fun with myself, and I didn't have to rely on passing the ball or, you know. I love team sports, but this felt like I was also beginning to understand like who I was and what I liked, you know. And I think it was the first thing that I enjoyed, like, for myself, you know. And I didn't need other people to do it, you know. Obviously you can shoot the ball and you can kick the ball against the wall by yourself, but certain individuality that comes with skating that just like unlocks a bunch of life lessons, especially, you know, in like in being patient and persistent, you know. I often think about that, just like even now, you know, I spent hours outside like learning how to ollie, and now it's like second nature to me. I can like close my eyes and I haven't lost that balance. But anytime I'm like finding myself doing something new and I'm struggling with it, I have to like think about, you know, 4-year-old, 5-year-old Sage outside spending months trying to learn a trick, you know? And I have skateboarding to thank for that, you know? We got our ass whooped all day just to land it one time, you know?
Yeah.
So I hope I answered that question.
Oh, you did. And you talk about, you know, what's interesting about, you're correct, you know, skating is an individual practice, is an individual sport. But then the inevitable is you find your crew.
Yeah.
Right? You find other guys that are just into the same shit that you're into. And you also mentioned, you know, you hanging out in Fairfax with the founding members of Our Future. You know, just to give us a timeline, you know, when did that happen? When did it go from solo Sage to now you hanging out with these kids? Like, how did that come about?
I couldn't tell you the exact year. But just from hanging out at Diamond so much, I would just see Tyler all the time, you know, and he would be with everybody else. They would hang out at Reserve, you know. Mm. And I remember being at another skate shop on Melrose, Brooklyn Projects.
Oh, yeah.
And
Dom,
exactly. Yeah. And Tyler was there, like, drawing on his sneakers, you know. He was like, "What's up, Sage?" And I was like, "Who is this guy?" You know, I didn't remember meeting him. You know, he must have been maybe 16 or something at the time. I was tiny. And I don't know, I just always showed love because they showed me love and looked out for me. Never thought that it would be like a Hypebeast podcast where this moment would come out. But yeah, I remember like Fairfax felt like a hidden gem to me, you know, and I always wanted to share it with other friends, you know, that especially where I'm from, like in Mid-City, there isn't much like skate shit going on.
It's, yeah,
like the kids in my neighborhood, Tebe, you know, who is my best friend since like elementary school. And I brought Tebe over there. I was like, "You gotta see this place, you know?" And it's right up the street. We would take the bus. We'd eat like Carl's Jr. chicken sandwiches and take the bus up to Fairfax. And we're skating the two stair, and Tyler had walked up the stairs, you know? And because they were just older kids, I would just try to impress them with whatever little move I could do off the stairs. And I think he was with Damo and Left Brain, Viren, and I was like, "Oh, watch this." I did some move and they walked up and Tebe was like, "Yo, you know them?" You know, and because Tebe was so hip at a young age, like he put me onto so much music. He's like, "Yo, you know them?" I was like, "Yeah, I know them just from being around here." And he's like, "Man, I love, they all make great music. You ever heard it?" And I didn't even know that they made music. I was like, I just knew them as the older kids that were super cool to me, you know? And because I was a child, you know, I was like, "You want me to introduce you to them?" You know? And he was like, "Nah, chill, I'm good." You know? The next day I had gone back to Diamond. I don't know if it was the next day or maybe a week later, I don't know. And I was in the Diamond store and there was a kid who worked there named Charlie. He's a grown man. I'm sure he might've been like 18 or 19. And I played, or showed them Tebe's MySpace page, his music. It was myspace.com/mindfuck64. I remember. And I typed it in and I felt like, I was like, "Yo, check out my man.
I'm about to put you on."
You know? And they're all kind of looking at me like, "Okay," like, you know, and I press play.
Yeah.
And they were all like, "Wow, he's really good, you know?" And Tyler was like, "Introduce me to him, you know?" I was like, "No problem." And I'm so excited. I felt like I had done something great, you know, but maybe also a little bit of like that. He was like, he didn't want me to do that, but it was because I was proud of him. I was like, yo, this is like my big bro. He's, to me, he was the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and met up with them at Reserve, you know, and at that age, like, now he's hanging out with older kids, and there wasn't really much time for little bro anymore. So I started to catch these resentments, like, what about me? You know, like, I was too young to hang out and smoke weed. And I mean, I ended up doing that on my own, by the house.
I was waiting for that. I'm
stealing
like,
weed
that
from my
happen.
Dad and shit. Yeah, so like, I guess that's my like, one thing that I'm proud of is kind of like making that connection, you know? And then he left, you know, and I was extremely alone, you know? I felt like, fuck, you know? My big bro is gone. I don't have anybody to like. I mean, another thing about it was that because he was a little bit older, my mom trusted me with him to like go to the West Side, go skate Venice, do whatever I wanted to do. I was a good kid, so she let me go wherever I wanted. But now that he was gone, I don't know. I found another friend group, but it just wasn't really the same, you know? And I don't know why my memory just kind of like stopped there, you know? And I think after he left, because I had missed him so much, I started connecting more with them again, with Odd Future Peoples. And just took good care of me. I didn't have any brothers growing up. So, you know, a lot of other kids turned to like gangs, and it was very healthy, you know, like lots of humor, skating, art, music. It was like everything that I loved, you know, and just also like older male figures. You know, I think that's what Fairfax did for me, which was really important, you know, outside of my like father and my grandfather, more like cousin, uncle figures that liked all the same things that I was into and also informed me on all these things, you know. I feel like I've been talking for so long.
No, not at all. I'm first of all, nothing's changed. There's always the dynamic of our friendship. I've gotten used to listening to you over the years. But like, I'm genuinely curious because like, it's interesting that you say your memory stops there, because I feel like that's where mine picks up, because I feel like that's where we met.
Right.
And I vividly remember, because at the time I was traveling a lot to Tokyo with Jason Dill. And Dale's like, yo, these fucking sick kids, they hang out on Fairfax. Like, you gotta fucking meet them. They're so fucking cool. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, this is Kid Sage and Sean Pablo. Like, they're fucking rad. And I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. You know what I mean? But it was like all these dots started lining up. And, you know, and I love the guys at the Fairfax store. Shout out to Jeff Cutter. I love you, Cutter. But a good telltale sign if something's good is if they hate it. Because I remember like, getting the litmus test. I'm like, yo, who are these kids that I hear hanging out in the store? You got some kid Tyler breaking boxes in the store interning, because like, they always did a good job of like hiding people from me, you know what I mean? Like I would never get like the full transparent report of what's happening in the stores. And I'm like, who's this Sage and who's this? He's like, oh, they're just Groms, they're like whatever, you know, they're corny. And I'm just like, huh, I mean, they must be kind of good. I was like, I gotta meet them. So I think a lot of what people also don't know about my job at Supreme was to find like the new faces for the brand. And it was, I think that was the beginning of a perfect storm, which would bring us to Cherry, right? To kind of like expedite the story further along. And I remember you guys got a lot of shit after Cherry, you know. I think you guys helped birth like a whole new, I think like demographic of fan, right, to the brand, but also just the skateboarding, but also fashion, because I know like this podcast, we're supposed to be talking about music and fashion, whatever, but I think what's being lost in history right now, because if we're not talking about it, no one else is talking about it, because we lived it, but the whole like cut off Dickies with a tucked in white t-shirt like you guys were at the forefront of that with some Chuck Taylors. Like, no one would know that that's the way you were dressing 10 years ago, you know, like by the way you've been dressing for like the last 5 years, right? Mm. You know, so I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's really important of how that was a ripple effect globally. Because I remember on one of our trips to Berlin, I remember first going to Berlin and people dressing in a certain way. And then when I went back, all the skaters suddenly had cut off Dickies and tucked in white t-shirts. And I was like, oh shit, like this is a thing. Like these kids just set off like a global trend. Mm. And I remember when you were about to do your Converse deal and I was like, they need to be fucking paying you this. You know, I was like, cause this is what's going on right now. And like, you need to know your self-worth and what's happening, because what I see happening right now, like you, whoever's the dickhead rep trying to tell you that you're worth this, you're actually worth triple. And you're like, okay, Ange, I'll tell them. Right. But I think it's really important to bring that moment because, yeah, the way you guys rode aboard was very reminiscent of all the things that you're talking about, right? Because it was guys my age that grew up in the 90s and, you know, like the Jimmy Gorekis and people of that kind of style, like that style of board, but dressing a different way, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. You know, I don't know if there's anything you want to add on to that, but I think for me, that's the first time when I seen like a shift in the way I saw kids your age starting to dress and like your power of influence at such a young age. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that at such an impressionable age, like I was also influenced to dress like that, you know, definitely by Dill mm-hmm. and Ben Cato. I think that they were, I don't know. I've always been kind of the kid who I know I'm not the first kid ever, you know. I got some like cutty YouTube video that you've never seen, or, you know, I always wanted to do something a little different and maybe outside of the norm, for especially for like brown kids, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, Ray Barbie and like a lot of the you know, Javante Turner mm-hmm. and
Kareem is another influence, yeah, I've heard you shout out before.
For sure. I mean, it's kind of like the culmination of all of them in terms of like how to skate, how to dress, you know. Yeah, I never really, I mean, I wouldn't dress like that now because it doesn't seem very comfortable to me.
Also, I think what's important, it just came to me now, that I think also gets lost in the history books because, once again, no one's really taking account for this. But I remember you and Sean painting your fingernails at that time, and that was so controversial, which is like the norm. Like, now your favorite rapper, I'm not going to shout them out, but is painting their fingernails and like how like gender norms are being broken. Like, no one really talks about how y'all were kind of like, unbeknownst to you, I don't think, obviously you're like, I'm going to start breaking gender norms by painting my fingernails, but like that was unheard of, you know, like what y'all were doing, you know what I mean? So I don't know. That's something I think is also really important to bring, because like 10 years later, that's the norm. But I remember you guys were at the forefront of doing that and getting a lot of shit for that, you know? Yeah. But I loved it, you know, like seeing it, I'm like, and I think what might can help us transition to the next topic is, you know, that freedom, you know, because I think it's kind of ballsy, 15, 16 years old, to be like, you know what, I'm not going to dress whatever it was. I can't even remember how people were dressing 10 years ago, but I'm going to do the, you know, high water Dickies with the white t-shirt and painted fingernails. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like what words of advice you got for someone that's 10 years younger, you know, 15 coming up now? Because I feel like social media almost have these kids like in this fear rap of like, you know, if my fit doesn't get validated by 1,000 people, right, and then my shit's whack. Right. Like, if you were thinking that way, and I don't want to assume for you, like, then that moment would have never happened. Mm.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of those, you know, like the one dude, I can't remember his name, you know, who am I here with? The TikTok guy. Oh. And he's talking about like your fit or whatever, you know. And at the end, they're like, what would you tell somebody? And they're always like, just be you, you know. And I'm like, oh God, you know, just be you. But yeah, you know, it's like, I mean, then we can talk about like meditation later on, but like, who are you without like all the noise? Like, you know, and I think that that's a lot of kids. I'm just finally like figuring out what I like, you know? And I think just like similar to like kind of Virgil's, I feel like thesis, which is just like childhood, you know? With the high waters, it's like my grandfather always used to say, like, a gentleman's pants should never touch his shoes, you know? Mm. So I felt like I could honor him in my own way, as much as I was influenced by, Dill and Ben and like hardcore punk rock. There was just something, there was this personal element to it, which made it feel like it was mine, you know. I didn't feel like I was just putting on a costume, you know. Mm-hmm. Whether that be like wearing your grandpa's favorite sweater or something, like something that is personal to you that tells you, you know, tells your story. You know, because people probably have 1,000 grandpa sweaters at like every vintage L Train vintage store or something, you know what I mean? And so something different when it's like, you know, it's got your family's scent on it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's what made me want to, like, you know, from cutting them to like, okay, I'm going to take this level of care to the next level and have them hemmed professionally and exactly where I want them to be on my shoe. In terms of the, in regards to the fingernail stuff, yeah, I think it was just Dylan, you know?
Oh, yes.
Dylan was like, whatever he did, I just watched him, you know? He was like graceful and calm and soft-spoken, and women loved him and
very
people
handsome.
Loved him. Like, you just be with him and you'd see people just like looking at him, like, breaking their neck on the street. And you know, whatever cigarettes he smoked, I think like I wanted to smoke those, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. And I remember him painting his fingernails black, and I was like, okay, you know, maybe I can. Yeah, it was Dylan, 1,000%.
Mm.
That's what it was. Like,
rest in peace, Dylan Reeder. Yeah, man.
I think he was the perfect in between, because it's like Dylan might have been like, what the fuck are you doing, you know? But Dylan was like, again, that like a cousin figure, not like an uncle, you know. And I just wanted to do whatever he, you know what I mean? Even before I knew him, I bought his Gravis shoe, which was like controversial, which was that like slip-on, like leather with this tiny thin sole, you know? I think that part is what people talk about Cherry being influential. That Dylan Gravis part really flipped shit around, especially because he was so good looking. It was like, you had to hate it, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, like, no way. And undeniably, his skateboarding spoke for itself, you know? But yeah, to answer the fingernails thing, it was Dylan, you know? Whatever he did, you know? Dill too, you know? They smoked Camel Lights and drank Perrier. I was like, that's what I do, you know what I mean? Like, I was impressionable, you know? I thought they were the coolest people ever, you know?
Because I know Sage so well, Sage is one of those annoyingly gifted characters in my life, you know, like where if I had to learn how to play the drums, it would take me probably 10 years. It takes Sage about like 1 hour. I remember I took Sage to my barber, to the Dominican barber on 107th and Amsterdam. And I don't know how we got into a conversation about basketball, because like, you know, I got bunnies, right? I could dunk. I was like, no, you can't. And he's like, yeah, I can. I was like, no fucking way this kid can dunk. And I was like, all right, I was like, there's a basketball court right up the block. I was like, I want to see you dunk after this haircut. And Sage joked it, like, legitimately.
It was a self-oop, but.
Yeah, it was good. But the point of me bringing this up is that, you know, Sage is a painter. Sage is a musician. Sage is a skater. Sage is a muse. And to kind of go back to the whole music subject, you know, when did you decide you wanted to start making music?
I guess making music like for public consumption.
No, like when did you like? Because the next question I was going to ask you, when did Navy Blue start?
Okay, yeah. Cool. My father, both of my parents are musicians. I just grew up in a musical household. What felt normal to me wasn't very normal. You know, the music that I was listening to and hearing. You know, my father. God, see that level when you're like. Yeah, you know, it's my story. It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, my father introduced me to a religious practice really young. And the music that came with that, what I should say a spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm.
The music that was intertwined with that spirituality allowed me to have a different experience again with music, you know, the same way that I had an experience with clothes, you know. I had just like a personal connection to the music where it felt like it was mine, you know. My dad plays a lot. He plays guitar, congas, and bata. So I grew up playing a lot of congas. That was like the and I was always embarrassed as a kid, you know. I can't explain it. Maybe just because of how ignorant Americans are, you know, and you're like, you know, do you play music? And you're like, yeah, I play percussion. They're like, oh, you play drums? And I'm like, yeah, congas and bata. And they're like, oh, bongos, nice, man. And you're like, it's not.
No, it's a little different.
It's a little different, you know, especially because it's music that you can play, but it was like, obviously it was introduced to me by my father, so I had to, it was like where we really got to bond, you know. And he taught me really young, and I remember going to, he would play at dance classes that'd be like Afro-Cuban classes at, you know, Lula Washington Dance Studio, Dance Theater, excuse me, and made me feel really special, you know. When my dad would sit me in the middle, and I'd play the caja, which is the big drum, you know, which is kind of like the lead drum. And I'd play, you know, maybe like makuta or something, which is like a pretty elaborate, not very elaborate, but somehow a tough rhythm. I never really had a hard time with it. And seeing that.
Of course not. Why would you, Sage?
Yeah, and the elders, you know, looking at me like so impressed when I was like 7 or something, you know. And they take their kangol off and put it on me, and I just felt like really special, you know. And also just like making my dad proud, you know. I think that's where seeing his eyes light up when I could play a rhythm and he'd teach it to me and I'd get it, you know. It was definitely where me and my father bonded the most over music. And yeah, the record collection, my mom, you know, it's like it was everything, like Malian big band, and then Joni Mitchell, and then Bjork, and then oldies, and then Nat King Cole, and just all over the place. And I felt like that was normal, you know?
Yeah.
And now that I've gotten older, I understand like my musical influences are all over the place, you know? And then I heard Tupac, and that just like my world just opened up, you know? I mean, you know, but like almost everything that I love, I have some type of spiritual connection to it, you know. There was something magical about hearing Tupac and being like, wow, he's dead, you know. Like the first album I heard was like Until the End of Time, which is like post mortem album.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to like listen to a guy's voice who is no longer like in the physical form, I was like, wow, you know? And that connected me to my brother in a way, because I had an old tape that they handed out at his funeral in England. So I had this very spiritual connection with music where I'm like, wow, I get to transcend like this, my physical, like it's a spiritual experience, you know? I'm kind of going into this other dimension that I don't even know what it is, you know?
And then at what point were you, because I remember specifically, we were in Tokyo in the basement of HMV listening to records, and you started pulling records, like records that I never heard of. And you're like, you should play this one. You should listen to this one. And I was like, this motherfucker trying to tell me about records. So I saw like the gradual, like, I like music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to collect music. And now I'm starting to collect music with a purpose because I want to make music.
Right.
So I saw that, but I wasn't really around from that next jump of, I'm going to start making beats, and then now I'm going to work under Navy Blue.
Hmm. Well, my first name was Young Max. Y-U-N-G, Max.
Of course.
Because my brother went by Max, Mad Max. And so I was like, you know, Young Max. What I will say is that another Fairfax moment, directly because of Tebe as well. And I loved Kanye West, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, wow, you know? Especially like when I would hear Gil samples or something, I was like, oh, like that, I heard that before, you know? And again, I'm like, this is mine. Like, that's my childhood. Now it's become something else, you know, that I love. And I think that's when my dad taught me how to like sample, you know?
Oh, and I never knew that.
Yeah.
Your dad taught you how to sample. Okay. My I always dad. Assumed Tebe's the
no,
one.
No, my dad.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was like, we sampled Four Women by Nina Simone.
Okay.
Which is the light nigga, dark nigga, story of OJ.
Yes.
Sample. And I saw like my dad like helped me chop it up and put it on the pads. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know. And all I wanted for Christmas was a drum machine,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Which one?
The XR20.
Okay.
Which was a battery powered, you put AA batteries in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I could put it in my backpack, go to school, make beats at lunchtime. And when I had that, I started, you know, researching about like the Akai and like all the music that came from that, because I obviously saw other people use it. And then I found Dilla, you know, and Tebe just opened up my world with like, you ever heard Doom? You know, you ever heard this? Listen to this. And I was, you know, and then I loved Alchemist as well. And I was just mm-hmm. like, you know, sampling music was so, funny that it's The Alchemist, but it's like really the alchemy of taking something and making it into hip hop, you know? Then I think at like, you know, 14 with like the teen angst, you know, newfound like personal depression. It's not like that childhood sadness. I started making music that was more like reflective of how I was feeling.
Yeah.
And not just like, I'm gonna make a Kanye type beat or mm-hmm. this, you know. I started to kind of discover my own style, incorporating stuff that I learned from my dad. And then when I was at boarding school. And then graduating high school is when I was like, I'm gonna start making this Navy Blue music, which is just at the crib, smoking weed, getting drunk,
mm-hmm.
like really settled in that like sadness, you know, and having a place that I could put it, you know. but it didn't really feel like I was releasing it. It was just like an extension of myself, somewhere I could put my thoughts and feelings. And I would record my voice for the first time on Apple headphones, you know, and I would kind of whisper and tuck my voice in the mix because I didn't want to hear my voice, you know. And then I think Tebe telling me that he liked my stuff, my vocals started to turn up a little bit more. Mm. And it's now blossomed into something that feels like the purest form of expression that I have in my life. It's like, with all the transaction that comes with skateboarding and fashion or whatever, modeling, whatever, it's the one thing that feels like I can't pimp it, you know? It's like, it's mine, and I just get to speak about my experience and my life. And it's like the culmination of all of my life experiences with my mom's influence, my dad's influence, you know? So I think
ties it up. The biggest takeaway every time I listen to your music is how honest and vulnerable you are, you know? And I feel like even that has influenced like the next kind of wave of like independent, you know, almost like what you're saying, like emo-y hip hop, but it's not soft.
Right.
You know, what do you think has, you know, contributed to that, to allow you to get so honest in the music?
We're at that part?
I don't know. Yeah, you go take it wherever you want. We go there.
I think getting sober.
Okay.
Getting sober was like the stamp, you know, getting to building a relationship with myself, you know, like I was saying earlier, like, what do I like, you know? And I don't think that, you know, my vulnerability and honesty in my music is performative, you know, it's like, it's really for me, you know, the same way that like getting sober was for me. You know, it was for other reasons at first, you know, but the longer I stayed sober, like, the more I learned, like, oh, this is the preservation of myself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, having a new relationship with my brain, you know? Like, the thoughts weren't so sad, and they were more so, like, reflective, and notice that I've gotten a lot better at expressing myself in the music. And you know, I did sign a deal, you know, and I thought that was going to change my relationship with it, but luckily nothing's changed. You know, it's obviously like you have a label and they're a bank and they do X, Y, and Z, but it hasn't changed my process, you know.
I definitely say your style has gotten better sober.
Mm-hmm.
As before.
Yeah. Somber.
More wiser decisions are being made before you left the house.
Right.
No, man, Sage, I'm so proud of you, and I'm genuinely from the bottom of my heart happy for you, you know, just watching you grow as a creative. You know, but all jokes aside, you know, you have gone through some different, you know, fashion phases over the last 10 plus years, you know. What have been some of the biggest influences? You know, like we talked about, the almost feel like the genesis of like the Cherry Dickies moment, and then we're here now. Like, what do you think have been kind of like those like kind of checkpoints?
Yeah, I guess just getting a little older, you know. I'm about to be 27 at the end of this month. That must be crazy for you. That means that you're about...
Hush your mouth. You hush your mouth.
You look great.
Thank you.
Brown,
you
don't too. Crack.
Absolutely not. Brown, get
some
down.
Some of these white folks.
Let's leave them alone, man. God bless them, man.
Anyways, just comfort. I think that was that's the shit that really... just wanting to be comfortable, you know. I was willing to, like, make these... sacrifices to like dress a certain way, and wasn't very comfortable, you know.
Yeah,
like, just I need some more room, you know, baggier pant, whatever. I don't know. I really don't know what the influences are. That's another thing, you know. It's like I don't work for Supreme anymore. Mm-hmm. So like understanding like what does my wardrobe look like when it's not just a closet full of Supreme stuff,
you right?
Know? And understanding that I'm not a big logo guy, you know.
I think that's arguable. Well, like, I feel like you're a big Stony Boy. You're at the forefront of.
Oh yeah, but I'm just. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm not a big like graphic.
Yeah, yeah, but you be rocking that badge. Yeah. You don't take the badge off. You keep that badge on. Don't front.
Depending on the day.
Okay. Okay.
But even with that, for example, the reason I like Stone Island is not because of the badge.
First of all, are they cutting the check? Most importantly. They need, like, my boy Sage needs to get a check cut because he's out here influencing. Because I know the people behind the brand, you guys are not short on money. You guys got bread, so make it right. Anyway, let's get back to this.
It's because, you know, I like the care that goes into the garments. I like that it's like that there's science that goes into it. That there, you know, I get to nerd out on the material. You know, I think that's what is intriguing to me, and it's comfortable, you know. And obviously the cultural impact in terms of like that I have family from London, and you know, the history of it there, and that's pretty much it for me. Just comfort, something with a story and some type of history. There's got to be some type of personal connection to it for me.
Yeah,
you know,
I think I, speaking for myself, I remember when I started taking you with me to Paris and London a lot. I remember mm-hmm. both of us being like highly influenced of what was happening at that time, which was like, I don't know, like 8 years ago or something like that. 8-7 years ago. And tracksuit Lacoste, was it? Or
first time that we went to London.
When was that?
After, when we went to the barber on 107.
Oh yeah, we did that first, that was a Stone Island shoot with Tyrone Laban. That's right.
So I was 15. So that was 12 years ago. Fuck.
Anyway, I got to get that Ginkgo Kolobo or something like that going on because I lose track of time. But you are very correct. Yeah, I think definitely like big shout out to, you know, all our friends from London and Paris for giving me the influence, you know, and a lot of sauce at that time because that just wasn't happening up here. Tracksuits and Air Maxes with the Gucci hat and the little man purse on the side, you know, for the, you know,
for the ting.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Shout out to Skepta too, man. But it was a very interesting and fun time. Now that we're nerding out on clothes, let's nerd out a little bit on music. You mentioned Doom before, and it seems like, you know, may he rest in peace. And it seems like his legend keeps growing. This last weekend, Yassine performed MF Doom in Paris. You mentioned Doom as being one of your influences. Operation Doomsday is still an album that I play over and over again when I'm working on a new collection. You know, what's your go-to MF Doom song or instrumental, like when you're in a rut and you need to get that battery charged?
I think it's like Rhinestone Cowboy.
Okay.
Mad Villainy, especially like for my age group, it's like that was the, I obviously love Madlib. I also like this joint called Absolutely.
Where's that at?
I don't know what album is it. Is it, what's the album called? Is it called Born Like This?
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy was like a, like he had like a crystal ball. He predicted so much, you know. And I also don't like the slander where, you know, people are like, he does, like, it's like parody. And like, no, there's a message in there, you know. I think with the delivery, because it's unorthodox, you know, and what someone might say is offbeat, you know. To me, that's just like, what's offbeat, you know? I don't really necessarily believe in that, you know?
Well, I don't think genius is supposed to be defined or categorized, right? Or just, you know, not even genius, just creativity, period. You know, you got to let it be what it is. And if you're really familiar with Doom and his whole history going back to, you know, KMD, and because one, I love him. I love KMD. He's one of the most influential groups for me growing up. You know, he did all the artwork. Right. You know, like he did the Black Bastards artwork. He did the Baby Sambo face. You know, like that was all his plan. You know what I mean? Like the music, the beats, you know, like it was always there. It just didn't, you know, the industry at the time, because of that controversial album cover, basically he got blacklisted and blackballed after that album. And he just kind of went, you know, just off the grid for a little bit. And I remember hanging out at Bobbito's Footwork when he started coming around in like 97, 98. And my best friend Vaz was the manager of the store. And I was there the day that the records came in for Hey, you know, and I was just like, fuck, you know, like my ears weren't ready to hear that at that age. You know what I mean? But it generated so much thoughts and creativity for me. Like, I think I wrote all my college papers to that, you know. I just kept listening to that over and over on vinyl. But anyway, small little tangent. Sage, it's been a pleasure talking to you. But before we go, I want to hear, there's two questions. The first one is, what words of advice would you have for our listeners? You know, because take into account, they're our age, but I always think about someone that's much younger. You know, what would you have to tell them? What words of advice, specifically for the music?
What, creating music?
Anything.
Just in general.
Yeah. Just you know how to navigate this.
Just be open-minded, like, all of to leave, like, our conditioning at the door and, like, have a new experience with the music. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm the kind of person that's just like, I don't like that. You know, I don't like this. I don't like that. But you got to give everything a shot, you know. I mean, I get, just get out of your own way. You know what I mean? And just be open, be open-minded. That's something I struggle with every day. I have to remind myself to be open-minded. And then, you know, I guess put in motion, like, the shedding of, like, all that big macho male ego shit, you know? Like, being vulnerable doesn't make you less of a man. To me, it makes you more of a man, you know?
True.
Yeah.
All right, last question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hopefully, like, somewhere where it's warm all the time, you know?
What would global warming, that might be New York?
Right. I'd like to have a home in Switzerland or something, you know, somewhere that's just like clean and new, you know what I mean? Just kind of stepping out of my comfort, stepping into like the discomfort of somewhere that I don't know, learning another language, you know, maybe have a family, who knows?
Well, here's the family. Love you, Sage.
Love you too.
My name is Angelo Bakke. Thank you for tuning in to The Business of Hype. Shout out to Bullet. Shout out to Hypebeast. Y'all have a blessed one. Peace. Hold up, before we cut out, I want my friend Paolo. Paolo, come over and say what's up. Paolo, you're not gonna come on? Come say what's up, Paolo, because this will be season two. We'll have one of my closest friends who I love to death, Paolo. Now we can go. This is Latino Heat, and we're out. Later, y'all.
Peace.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Business of Hype. Subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, and check us out on YouTube if you really want the full experience. While you're at it, go ahead and leave us a review too, and let us know how you feel about it and what we're doing over here. Whether it's right or wrong, just be honest, be fair, and be loving. Peace.